From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows. Children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and well, alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever forevering, and forever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, Count Pank himself. Oh, hey there, Count.
Oh, hello there. Hi there. Hey there. Ho there, Bob. Welcome back. Another episode. You know, I missed you last week, Bob.
I know, and we'll get to that in a minute. How have you been, Count?
I've been all right. You know, I can't complain really too much in these crazy times, in this crazy society. Sometimes you lose track of things, but, you know, at the end of the day, as long as you piece yourself together and keep on forging ahead, Bob, that's
you
all that matters.
You are the most Chicago-sounding vampire I've ever heard. Together.
Together.
Let's go hang out
that
in the
accent,
front
room. I tell you, Bob.
Go hang out in the front room.
Oh, hey there. Oh, hey there.
Oh, the oh, hey.
What's the, how's
you know,
it going
house
again?
In Chicago? Oh, hey there. The people in Chicago, though, you know, we don't say our,
no.
We go this, that, these, those.
That's right. Exactly.
That's just how we talk in Chicago. It is what it
that
is.
That is what it is. But, you know, I had a couple good weekends there.
Yeah, let's get your weekends updates.
Man, you're making me think far back here, Bob. I barely remember what happened this past weekend, but. The weekends have been all right. You know, we passed the Halloween season where the veil was at its thinnest.
Yeah, veil's back to being 2020 thin, as I've been calling it this year.
Well, how's that work? Now, what does it go to now? What's the...
The next step would be Yule.
Okay.
And the winter solstice where the veil is thinned again.
Okay.
But this entire period it's thin. I mean, technically it's the thinnest at Samhain. And the thinnest at Yule time.
All right.
But I just have a theory, and maybe our guest will be able to confirm with me how weird 2020's been. We're going to get to him in just a minute, because I'm going to embarrass the crap out of
plus
him.
Plus, he's
in
not.
Minute.
Well, he's back now. But
he's back. Okay, we're going to embarrass him in a few seconds.
No, for sure. But other than that, Bob, you know, I've just been kind of hanging around, as vampires do. Get it? That's a vampire joke for you right
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
Nothing really too exciting, though. Getting ready for another thin veil here.
Yes. Last week was just... I've been running nonstop between, day job, which I'm still at right now because of COVID. Mm-hmm. So I've been running back and forth between day job, trying to balance out the show, trying to balance out life outside the show. And everything just kind of came to a head last week, and I just needed a breather.
Yeah.
We were going to take Thanksgiving week off anyway because we were due for a break. So we're not going to take next week off for Thanksgiving. We just took off last week.
How about that? We switched the holiday.
So we just switched the holiday. Yeah. So let's pretend last week was our Thanksgiving vacation because we only have two breaks scheduled this year for the remainder of the time. We got what we were supposed to have in Thanksgiving. We just pushed back so I can catch a breath.
There you go.
And then we're going to take off the week of Christmas, I think, this year.
All right.
I think I'm going to give Count Panic a little Christmas present.
We'll roll the Yule Cat up. People are already excited about the Yule Cat, I think.
Count! Maybe we're going to combine the Krampus and the Yule Cat all in the one thing for you. Would that make you happy?
That would be fine.
I am going to announce our winter theme this year because I think we've nailed pretty much the spirit of the holidays to it, like the T over the past couple of years we've been doing the show. Mm. So we're not going to be doing spirit of the holidays this year. We're going to be talking about winter folklore creatures, starting with the devastating specter moose.
A moose.
It's a moose, but we'll get to that,
that
first
exciting.
Week of December. So we're not going to get there just yet.
Okay.
Let's introduce our guest. You guys may recognize him, his voice, as our late night caller that likes to keep me up at night to fill me in on facts that I don't remember. This gentleman also happens to know more about the paranormal than I think anybody I've ever met in my entire life. Not just paranormal, but just weird events in general. This guy's investigated, interviewed, wrote an article about. He's a published journalist, a soon to be author, a dear friend of mine, and somebody I like to personally consider a colleague in the paranormal. We have Jack as our guest this week. And before I say hello to Jack, Count Panic and I have something to say to you, Jack.
Yes.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Jack. Happy birthday to you.
Hey, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
I just want to point out that Jack is taking time out of his 111th birthday tonight. His 111th birthday to be a guest on Bob After Dark this week. This was a long-awaited episode. Jack and I have been talking back and forth about it. I'm like, yeah, we got to figure out how to get Jack into the mix. And so, Jack, this is not your first rodeo in the world of being a guest on a paranormal show. But,
no, but this is my favorite one, to be honest. So there you go.
I bet he says that with
he
everybody.
Says that with all the, he says that to all the cute podcast hosts. Jack, in case somebody's new to the Bob After Dark verse, can you explain who you are and why you're on my show tonight?
Sure. So, for you guys that don't know, my name is Jack Chavez, and I probably call every episode at Bob After Dark. So, like Bob said, you probably heard my voice too many times. Like Bob said, I am a writer, I got my degree in anthropology, and I kind of take an anthropological approach in the paranormal. I think it's really important to, you know, have a well-grounded knowledge in science when dealing with the paranormal, whether it's UFOs or ghosts or cryptids, the occult, etc. So, I've been doing this for, today I'm 32 years old, so I've been doing this, several years, since I was, like, young, a teenager. But yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Oh, and he's a soon-to-be published author. He's a published journalist. You've written articles for newspapers on things. And, Jack, if I could share a story real quick. Jack and I met last year at the Southside Podfest. I was a little under the influence at the time, and I'm just like, who's this?
Yes, you were.
Yeah, well, who is this good-looking gentleman coming up to me in a scarf saying, I know who you are? Jack and I re-met later on. We just happened to both be kind of in the same area investigating, and I met him up at B-Dubs for, like, a beer. And then we went and had a drink at Chet's Melody Lounge, which is, big paranormal bar. But Jack and I probably closed that bar down that night. Jack doesn't drink.
Yeah,
I played it light, but our conversation went for hours.
Yeah, it did.
And Jack is just one of the easiest people to talk to in the paranormal. And the reason why I bring that up is Jack, one of my favorite stories Jack has about something he did research on. We're going to talk about this now and get it out of the way because it's one of my favorite Jack stories. Is Jack not only is a knowledgeable person in the paranormal and somebody I even go to for questions about it, Jack's also a researcher in weird events. And apparently, Jack was doing some research on a kangaroo.
Yeah.
And I was hoping you could talk a little bit about your kangaroo research, Jack.
The phantom kangaroo phenomena.
Yes.
So there's been several kangaroo sightings throughout the Midwest, particularly in Illinois. And one of them was just in the north side of Chicago. The exact neighborhood escapes my memory, but there was two police officers that got a call about a kangaroo hopping around. So when they got to the location, they actually did witness the kangaroo. They chased down the kangaroo and it tried to fight them, but it escaped. And this sounds like folklore, but it's actually well documented. There is a researcher named Adam Selzer who actually interviewed one of the police officers who's now retired. This was back in the 70s, I believe the late 70s. So yeah, this officer was interviewed by a researcher, and I did find one of the witnesses on another witness. It was a An older woman, well, now she's an older woman, but it was a woman at the time. She said that a kangaroo was just, she steps outside and the kangaroo was hopping outside of her home and just kind of like casually passes her house. So, and she called the authorities and let them know that there was a kangaroo there. I found her name in one of the articles, and just through a lot of digging, I was able to find her phone number, and I called her, and to be honest, she wasn't too happy with me calling her. I was very respectful. I told her who I was, you know, what I do. I asked her if she had a few minutes to talk about, you know, her sighting, and I did, you know, I mentioned the phrase phantom kangaroo phenomena, and that's what she did not like. She said that this was not a phantom, that this was a solid creature animal, and you know,
I'm
she
sorry, I'm
said,
laughing.
yeah, no, it's funny. She, you know, wanted to know how I found her and after all these decades. And so I, you know, I told her all that and stuff, and then she said, look, I this wasn't anything supernatural. This was just a solid kangaroo. I'm not crazy, and I really tried explaining respectfully that no, I wasn't. I believe you. I don't believe that you're crazy. I just you know, I'm just trying to get to, you know, the heart of the matter. And she just asked me not to contact her again, and I said no problem. You know, I won't do that. So
Well,
that's yeah.
thanks for retelling that story, Jack. We won't bring up the kangaroos, and if the young lady who is if this lady is listening to the show right now, we promise we won't bug you about the kangaroo sightings. But the truth is
No.
out there.
Right.
If this is your first time ever watching or listening to Bob After Dark, this is the live show podcast, everything paranormal, legends, lore, and supernatural, weird and odd news stories of the week. We talk about your ghost stories, and tonight, because it's Jack's birthday, I'm going to be bringing about a new segment on the show, as requested by you guys, the fans, that I put up in a poll last week on the Children of the Night page, asking about what people wanted more. Jack was the only cynical monster in the group who said he wanted more episodes to go for longer. And I thought about it for 3 seconds and I said, you know, Jack, most podcasts come out bi-weekly. I come out weekly and every episode is between an hour and 2 hours, sometimes
Not good
three
enough.
if yeah
Not good enough.
5 hours.
5 hour-long episodes, you know, coast to coast. If you guys are listening, George, when it comes time for you to retire, you don't have to do it now, but when the time comes for you to retire and you're looking for a replacement, I'm already on the radio doing this, so you can, you know, you can give me a holler. But until I'm the new host of Coast to Coast, you guys, I don't know, man, that's a lot of episodes. I'm sure people would get tired of hearing me. Maybe except for you, Jack. You'd be okay with it. But Jack was the only cynical one that
Bob, I
wanted
don't
it.
think George Norrie has the fans that you have.
I think George Norrie has a bigger fan base than the Children of the Night.
A
Prove me
bigger, but not
wrong.
as interesting.
Fair enough. Not everybody has, you know, the kangaroo hunter of 2000, whatever year you were doing that, but I digress. We're going to be debuting a new segment on the show. This is where I get an EVP from a paranormal group or somebody who caught an EVP at some point in their life. We're going to broadcast it live on the show. I know what they think the EVP is going to say, but we're going to find out what you, the fans, think you heard or didn't hear about the EVP. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to be doing that after the lore of the week. So that means if you're interested in EVP, you have to sit through the entire episode.
There you have it.
That's metrics for you,
That's
baby.
what did they call it in the biz? Yeah,
That's the
not a
hook.
cliffhanger, but
That's the hook.
a hook.
That's the
A
hook. You
hook.
got to listen to the episode if you're interested in EVP.
How about that?
But anyway, let's move on. If you are a fan of Bob After Dark and or first time, let's talk a little bit about what our beginning part of the show is. And this is where we talk about weird, spooky, or bizarre news stories of the week. This is where you, the fans, send in articles to us, or we could talk about and give you some raw opinions on. Typically, Count Panic isn't prepped for, well, anything,
No.
so we get the hashtag Panic's take. But because we do have a guest tonight, we're gonna get Jack's take too. Our first story is actually coming to us from CNN, and this is scientists have found a rare half male, half female songbird. It, according to the CNN, it may not be one in a million, but it's extremely close. Researchers have discovered a rare songbird that is male on one side of the body and female on the other. It's being described as a once-in-a-lifetime discovery. The last time the Powder Mill Nature Reserve at the Carnegie Museum of Natural History found another was 15 years ago, and it's only the fifth to be discovered in the nearly 800,000 birds that the Nature Reserve has seen. And they're saying that, you know, some people say they've seen them, but this is extremely rare. They're saying that how this works is that the bird has different colors, and this particular songbird is supposed to be color orientated, basically being either there it's female or male, darker, you know, tones. But in this one, they're saying because it's so rare, scientists don't know exactly how it's formed. They have an idea. It's something called, and correct me if I apologize if I pronounce this wrong, but Gina Dromathopy, and they're saying that it can occur in spiders, crustaceans, and even chickens, but this might be the first time they've ever seen it in a songbird.
Wow.
Hashtag Jack's take, because it's his birthday.
How about that?
Well, you know, it's 2020, so if there's going to be two genders, you know, that's perfectly okay now.
Oh, absolutely. But it's interesting to find, like, a songbird that's showing the two different color swaps. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting how there's this phenomena. And I don't even know if it should be classified as paranormal.
No, absolutely not. Just different.
Or more scientific, but there's this phenomena that spontaneous evolution, you know, the idea that, you know, usually evolution takes, you know, hundreds of thousands of years or millions of years, but there are some animals that will spontaneously evolve, and it's a mystery. We don't know why this happens.
Huh. Hashtag panic stake.
Well, you know, that it's an interesting find, and of course, a very interesting bird there. But hardly the most fascinating. Remember that was that one time in the news? It was the half man, half horse.
That's
remember
called
that?
It's called a centaur.
Yeah, but wasn't that crazy?
What, a centaur?
Yeah.
I mean, that wasn't one time in the news. They've been talking about that for thousands of years, man.
Yeah, but okay, this songboard bird is cool, but that have a man crossed with a horse. That's unbelievable.
Count, that's a common theme in Greek mythology, man.
Yeah, but I'm saying in real life, like now.
Have you seen a half man, half horse?
Oh, I've never seen a half woman bird, half male bird either. I don't know. It's it could happen.
When was this on the news? Because I gotta
count. What news are you watching? Is a stone tablets
no,
in Greece?
No, I'm just saying that
this World Weekly magazine.
It's in the books, Bob. It's in the books.
It's in the books. Yeah. I wouldn't say that's news.
Yeah, well, no, but it's in the books. It's documented.
You know, I was gonna say, I think you're reading some stone tablets there, or maybe he's visiting Scotland and dealing with the Nukalevi. We have a caller on the line, which we're gonna take before we dive right into the next news story. Count, let's So let's send them right on over. Who do we have?
Oh, hey there, Bob. Hey, we got a caller, Richard, on the line.
Hey, Richard, you're on the air.
Oh, one second. Go ahead, Richard.
Richard, you're on the air.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, how's it going, Richard? How are you?
I'm all right, man.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Chicago, man.
Oh, well, welcome, welcome. What's on your mind tonight, Richard?
Oh, nothing, man. I just want to wish Jack Chavez a happy birthday.
Well,
thanks.
Hear that,
thanks,
Jack?
Lot,
you got
man.
More fans than Bob After Dark tonight.
Hey, everybody, say hi to Jack.
Jack Chavez!
Big
thanks,
fans
guys.
Over here, man. I grew up with Jack Chavez. We went to high school together.
Oh, and Jack's brilliant, isn't he?
Oh, man. I learned so much from him. I've been with him on investigations. He's great. Awesome.
Absolutely. Do you have a question for Jack you'd like to ask live on air to all of Jack's fans?
Make it a hard one.
Why are you ignoring my calls?
Oh.
I'm just kidding, man. No, I didn't. I don't. I just wanted to say happy birthday to my buddy.
Oh,
hey,
well,
thanks, man. I really appreciate that.
Absolutely.
No problem,
we're
man.
Happy
we're
to
watching,
have you.
Keep us laughing.
Hey, make sure you like the Facebook page or follow us on social media, Bob. After
yeah, and share it everywhere.
Yeah, the...
I did. I shared it on like 3 groups already.
Excellent. Thank
That's
you
not
so
good
much.
Enough.
Have a good one, guys.
Have a good one. Hear that? The Jackdom, which is what I'm going to call Jack's fandoms tonight. The Jackdom. The Jackdoms come out in droves tonight.
That was
another,
nice.
Do we have another caller?
No. But that
you
was
were
very
looking
nice
like
call.
You were pressing the button.
No. That was just my hand.
All right. Let's move on to the next story of the week. And this is scientists discover a bizarre hell planet where it rains rocks and oceans are made of lava. The story comes to us from CBS. And they're saying this planet is dubbed K2-141b, and they're saying that it is hundreds of light years away and the oceans are made of molten lava. Winds reach supersonic speed and the rain is made out of rocks, and they're saying it's probably the most extreme planet they have ever seen. Chances are we haven't discovered light speed travel yet, so we wouldn't make it there, but B, you probably don't want to be here. And it's pretty wild to think that we found this hellish landscape in the year 2020. Hashtag Jack's take.
Pass. Go ahead.
Okay, hashtag panic state.
You know what, Bob? Living here in the Midwest, of course, we complain a lot about the weather and the rain and the snow and the sleet. But this sounds like something to complain about, this weather right here.
That
I mean,
would be
you're
something
saying
that,
the rain is made of stones.
Stones. It's literally raining rocks.
That's a recipe for destruction right there, Bob.
No, it doesn't sound like a place I'd want to live.
No, you get pelted and you're probably much knocked out for life.
And then if you decide to go swimming, it's not like water. You're swimming in lava.
Well, I'm just hoping. We learned from years' experience playing The Floor is Lava for this moment.
So what you're saying is you're prepared to live.
I'm prepared.
On this place.
Maybe not for the rocks, but I'm prepared for the lava.
What are you going to say, Jay?
I wouldn't be surprised if this was Chicago.
It
sounds like a normal Chicago seasonal change. Yeah. You know, we got Lake Michigan turns to lava a couple times a year, and then we get rain of rocks. It's a whole big nightmare.
Sounds about right.
And somebody, Aaron in the chat just said, isn't that where the planet where Anakin and Obi-Wan fought?
That's Dudush? True.
Yeah. And then Vic says, happy that you're on bad for your birthday, Jack. So just know that the Jackdom is out in full force on Game of Bob After Dark. Everybody in the everybody, if you get a chance to jump into the chat over at the Facebook Live, make sure you guys wish Jack a happy birthday.
Hashtag
happy birthday.
You got to do a hashtag or does it count?
It doesn't count. All right. So this final story is probably my most interesting story. This one stands out to me the most. And this one actually, the first two stories, one came from our fan Whitney Rodan, who sends in a lot of our news articles. And then one was my own discovery. This final one is coming to me from my parents.
Wow.
They were super excited to share this with me, and it's about a certain character named Al. Al is a giant alligator thing that has been spotted on Florida golf courses post-hurricanes. And it's not like a normal alligator. This thing is standing up, and it's like standing up like straight up. It's taller than me and way longer than me, and its tail is almost like, it looks like something straight out of Jurassic Park. If there was a cryptid that is like bright, like straight up, like concrete evidence, it's this thing. Jack, have you seen the pictures of it?
Yes, this thing is basically a dinosaur.
Panic, have you seen it?
I have seen this.
Yeah. So what do you guys think? This is a just a rare fluke, or do you think this is an actual like cryptid that the hurricanes kind of gave through to be
I
able to
I think this
see?
Is related to the alligator that was found in Lincoln Park in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
I should say Humboldt Park.
The Humboldt Park, yes. The Humboldt Park alligator. This thing is massive. Like, I've never seen an alligator out that big, and apparently it's not the only one. So sources are saying that a couple more have been spotted up since the last hurricane went through. And, you know, it's not uncommon from people of Florida to see alligators. It's a thing they deal with on the normal if you live in the area. But this thing would, like, wreck your car. Like, the tail would whip and just break your car. That's how crazy this thing is. It's like Godzilla on four legs.
So you're saying, you know, you have to worry about the sharks and tornado, but the alligators and the hurricanes as well you have to worry about, because as you see in the picture, and I'm sure a lot of people at home saw this these pictures and videos, what's the normal weight of an alligator there, Bob? Do we know?
Jack, what's the normal weight of an alligator?
Too heavy.
So this is like an alligator on steroids here.
I'm telling you, cryptid.
Yeah. Oh, I saw. Cryptid, okay.
Cryptid. It's definitely a cryptid. This is our concrete proof that something out there doesn't make sense, because there is no reason. I mean, like, you think of big reptiles like, you know, Komodo dragon or an alligator. This thing is like way bigger than that. This is like monster movie level big.
How do we know this is just not, you know, for the golf course publicity? Like, hey, come play on a golf course. We got giant alligators roaming.
No, I don't want to be anywhere near that thing.
Well, like, get it past the clown's mouth and get it past the giant alligator.
It's not a miniature golf course, but Jack, what were you going to say?
The average alligator is 500 pounds.
Oh, wow.
This thing has to double or triple.
1,000 pounds.
I'm going to share the pictures on the Children of the Night page specifically, and I want you guys to tell me, cryptid or not cryptid.
I like Panic's idea that this golf course battle engineered an alligator.
For publicity.
It makes
sense. For publicity, yeah.
You know, there was a story about a guy who was bioengineering reptiles. Maybe you heard of it. It was some kind of park. And it didn't end well for them either. They made a few movies about it.
I think I saw that. It's a documentary, right?
At first, I was really trying to think what you would.
Jack, you're fired
about.
If you didn't get my joke.
I got it now.
If they're bioengineering things like this, I would probably tell them to stop.
Well, we'll find out what happens.
Because that thing's not.
It hasn't attacked anybody yet, though.
Well, no, it's. I don't think anybody wants to get close enough to it.
No, but sometimes.
That's not something like even animal control is going to take care
of.
You know, I don't get excited about these things, but this is like as close to like a cryptid sighting as we're gonna get, because this thing isn't natural. Like, this isn't something, or it's something that we have not discovered. But they've dubbed his name Al.
That makes sense. Hopefully Al's friendly.
I mean I don't think it needs to be being that big. I think it can basically decide what it feels like.
Well, somebody should take it. We talk about cryptids a lot on the show, Bob, of course, Bob After Dark, and maybe how to, you know, overcome these cryptids. How do you overcome a giant cryptid alligator?
What's the giant harpoon gun?
There you go. Okay.
But I mean, don't fight Al. He doesn't look like he's bothering anybody, or they. I don't know. We don't know.
We don't know what Al is. It might be.
But Al might be whatever Al wants to be. Al could be. How's that sound? Because
sure.
You know,
you gotta call the spirit of Steve Irwin.
Yeah. Right. That's
yeah.
Seance for Steve Irwin. Yeah. All right. Now, folks, if you find yourself a weird, spooky news article and you'd like us to share it on the show, slide into our DMs. You can find us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, at Bob After Dark, or Facebook.com/Bob After Dark. The Bob After Dark email is down for the next 2 days, folks. So if you try to reach us on email, email us on our backup email address, which is BobAfterDarkShow@gmail.com.
Bob, is Pigeon available still?
Is what?
Pigeon available still?
Oh, Pigeon? What do you mean Pigeon?
Contact you.
Oh, Messenger Pigeon. I'm contact me, no, but for you, I hear the crows are the way to go. You tape the scroll to its foot and it goes right off. So
I still use Owl.
Jeez. All right, folks, before we dive into ghost stories, which is what I'm going to make Jack talk about here, is we have reviews, and this is where you guys, the fans, write us reviews on either Apple Podcast or Audible, and Count Panic himself will cheers you live on the show, and you'll get a special thank you from us.
Kind of like this, but...
So, for whatever reason, Apple Podcast happened to skip a review.
Really?
And I feel bad that we didn't cheers them during this review. Oh. So, this is back in... on 10/16, but for whatever reason, I promise you, I check this every day. And it didn't pop up, but for whatever reason, it popped up now. And this is from PamCakes66. That's not pancakes, but PamCakes.
Okay.
PamCakes66 says, great show. I listen to Bob and Count Panic during my workouts. It makes my time go by quick, and I laugh out loud once in a while. Keep up the good work. 5 stars.
There you go.
I'm glad to hear that you can You can work out to us talking about monsters and ghosts and stuff.
See, I normally work out the Def Leppard or something, Van Halen, but we're just as good, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It bothers me that she said she only laughs once in a while.
I mean, it's fine, as long as they admit that there was a laugh. So
I'll take one.
Pamcake66, this is for you. Thank you so much for the review and the 5 stars.
Yes, Pamcake66. Let's do a toast then.
Yes. And then this next one is from 11-7 from somebody named MegV646, which I have a feeling I know who this is.
MegV.
MegV. I wonder who that could be. Well, MegV left us a review, and it says, Bob After Dark is the best. Bob and the Count are super fun and entertaining to listen to. I feel like we are basically best friends, and I love their show so much. If you have a creepy story to tell, these are the guys for it. That's now, nice. MegV646, thank you for the very nice review. We appreciate it. Here's to you, MegV646 and Pamcake636.
A lot of numbers here, Bob.
Lots of sixes. But here's to you guys. Thanks for the nice reviews.
Yes, MegV and Pamcakes, thank you very much. I will do a second toast as well, or double the toast.
Double the toast. Folks, if you have not left a review yet, you need to get on it and leave us a review. The more reviews we have on the Apple Podcast side, the more we get popped up in the algorithms across the board. Little do you guys know that Apple Podcast kind of dictates what a lot of other podcast viewers get to see. So the more reviews you guys leave and the more 5 stars one you guys leave, the more algorithms we pop up, and then the closer I get to this being my full-time job, which in that case, then you could have me more than once a week, I think. Maybe. Yeah. We'll see. But get on it. Leave us a review. The other place you can leave us a review is Audible. I mentioned this the last episode, but we were one of 70,000 podcasts, which I know 70,000 sounds like a lot, but in the grand scheme of things, a podcast, we were one of 70,000 podcasts picked to be featured on Amazon service Audible for their podcasting stuff. So you guys, if you're an Audible book reader and you just want to subscribe to us so you can listen to your books and listen to your podcast at the same time, you can find us right on Audible, Bob After Dark, and you can leave us a review right on Audible.
Because there's probably more than 70,000 podcasts in the state alone.
I forgot. I asked Pat from Ghostly this once, and he said there was over 1 million podcasts in America alone.
Wow.
So you have to think. There was. I mean, I'm gonna be proudful that it was myself, Ghostly made it, and then Freak of the Week, the another Memoriam Development podcast, paranormal parody show you guys should check out. It's hilarious. We were all picked to be on the Amazon Audible stuff. So if you guys are on Audible and that's the way you want to listen to the show, you totally can. Make sure you leave us a review. And then next time, you yourself may be cheersed. All right. Let's talk about something spooky. Now, I don't think Jack has had a paranormal experience in his time, like something definitive, right? You're a person that wants to eliminate plausible doubt before you jump in and say something, right?
Yeah, I want to stress that I'm not, you know, a total skeptic. Definitely not.
No, but you are a man of science.
Yeah, I tread cautiously.
Okay.
You know?
So if you don't have a ghostly encounter to share, I'm just going to make you do this.
Okay.
What is your favorite ghost story associated with Chicago? And if it's something lesser known, I want you to tell it. Because this is the part of the show where I'd make you the fans submit in a ghost story and I would share it live, but
well,
instead
about,
we got
how,
Jack.
How about I tell you an interesting story that I did that I do have actually.
Absolutely, let's hear it.
So this was last year. I was investigating the Roth House in Watsika, Illinois.
Okay.
It was known as the Watsika Wonder. It was it made national news at the time, late 1800s. A girl was possessed by the spirit of a deceased, another deceased girl. Now, this wasn't a demonic possession. This wasn't anything malevolent. She just simply was possessed by the spirit of the girl, and she was able, the living girl, was able to give detailed information about the family of the deceased girl without knowing them, without ever meeting them. So she, I investigated there, and there was a couple of us, and In the midst of the investigation, a couple of people decided that they were going to do a seance. And, you know, me being a little bit more skeptical, I was in another room, but a seance did, they were doing the seance, and I went downstairs, and the table that they were doing the seance and started shaking. And, you know, I was a little bit skeptical, not because I didn't think anybody was lying, but because I just, you know, maybe they were unconsciously doing something. Now, keep in mind, everybody there I knew, they were veteran investigators. I investigated them with them before. So I kind of trusted them. So what I did, and everybody had their eyes closed. It was a round table. They had their fingertips on the table, and they had their, you know, everybody was like in a relaxed state with their eyes closed. So as the table was shaking, I kind of went around the table to make sure, you know, nobody is accidentally hitting the table, make sure that, you know, their whole hand isn't on the table and it's shaking that way. I went around the table and I did not see why the table would be shaking so violently. And it really was. And I was kind of in awe. And this was happening, you know, a minute goes by and it's still happening. And I'm looking under the table and I don't see any, you know, not only any hoaxing, but any like accidental hitting of the table. Huh. I reached out to the table, and as soon as my fingertips touched the table, it jerked back and it stopped shaking. That's the closest I've ever gotten to anything, you know, that could potentially be paranormal. I'm not going to say that that was paranormal. I don't know what it was, but it was odd.
Hmm. You know, we have another investigator in the chat, Jack, that's chiming in. They've actually been there. I'm going to see if they'll call in during, because we have another caller
right now. We do
have a caller. So I'm going to see if I can get Pete to call in and talk to you about your experience there. I'm going to message him now.
Okay.
Who do we have on the line?
We have Angel on the line. Angel.
Hi, Angel. You're on the air. Where are you calling from?
Well, hey, guys. I am calling from Normal, Illinois, but I'm not so normal, so.
Well, hello from Normal, not so normal, Illinois. What's on your mind tonight, Angel?
Hey. Well, I just wanted to give a shout-out to my buddy, Jack. I wanted to tell him happy birthday.
Thank you, Angel.
Last, Jack, when was it? It seems like it was just yesterday that we were at the Allerton Mansion together.
It was. We investigated there, what, 2 weeks ago now?
Yeah, it's been 2 weeks, and my phone hasn't been working properly since.
Oh, jeez. That's what we like to call a spiritual problem with the phone.
I'm telling you, Jack is just, oh, gosh. I don't know if you told, I just chimed in here, but I just tuned in, so I haven't heard about anything yet. Can't wait to hear the rest of this podcast from the beginning. But I did want to share that Jack knows his stories. He knows his history, and a brilliant writer, a fantastic human being. And we were up all night. I mean, we had the gear, we had the EMFs, yeah. We had the downing rods. Hey, I finally got it right.
Finally, we had trouble pronouncing the dowsing rods that night. So
the dowsing rods. Yes.
Yeah.
it took a while, but I'm telling you, there were quite a few experiences I've never had before, and I've had some strange things happen, but you know, if I was by myself, you know, can I really prove it? Well, Jack and I were running around, right? And trying to find the other two.
It was a lot of fun.
Oh, it was great. We heard whisperings from one. We both heard audibly whisperings that we thought were the other two of the crew, Anthony and Ivory. And they were in a completely different part of the house. I mean, we both looked at each other, started going in that direction, and they actually had the same occurrence. So there were a lot of whispering. Yeah.
Thinking very, it was
very
us.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah. But you know, I didn't see any sightings. There were a lot of premonitions and feelings, but I'm telling you, it was just fantastic. And overall, it was just very thrilling. One, to learn about this brilliant human being, you know, I mean, Mr. Allerton was just wonderful, but also really mostly to meet Jack, because Jack's just a fantastic man. So I just wanted to say hi.
I appreciate that, Angel.
Jack's 10 out of 10 in my book, but thanks so much for calling in, Angel. We appreciate it. Make sure you're part of the Jackdom there. Make sure you follow the Bob After Dark on social media.
You got it. Put that plug in right there.
Absolutely. Jack, I'm going to have to plug everybody because it seems like you're the Jackdom is coming out tonight. We have another We have another caller coming on the line. Thanks so much for calling in, Angel, from Normal
My
But
pleasure.
Not So Normal.
Thank you, Angel.
Yep.
Talk to you later.
Happy birthday, Jack. Bye-bye.
All right, who do we have on the air?
People, before we get to Pete, one last thing about this phone thing.
Uh-huh.
So they were in their place together, the phone got possessed, and now it doesn't work anymore, Jack?
We saw that at Crown Point before, the Crown Point
But
jail.
How do you explain that when you go to want to get your phone fixed to Verizon or Sprint? Hey, my phone is possessed.
Demonic possession.
How do I fix this
phone? They need insurance for this kind of thing, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to laugh you out of the building. But anyway, we got Pete on the line here.
I believe this is Pete Christ, yep. the director of Northwest Indiana Paranormal.
Oh, hey there, Bob.
Oh, hey there, Pete. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing good. Was I right that this is Pete from Northwest Indiana Paranormal?
It is.
Ah, now, Pete, you've been where Jack was just talking about. I was wondering if you can share some experience.
I've been there multiple times with several of my groups. It's always very active every time we go there. I've never had a disappointing visit out there. We've had situations where we put dolls up in Lorancy Venom's room, which I don't know if he explained, was the girl who was supposedly possessed by Mary Roth's spirit. But in her bedroom, we had a doll that was knocked off of a table. There's a lot of where people have shortness of breath and have to walk outside. Like he was talking about with like the seance room in the back. I mean, they did seances there for years. So, you know, for somebody to go and do one nowadays, I totally believe that that table was probably shaking.
That's spooky.
Yeah, like I said, there was no malevolent feeling though in the Roth house, right, Pete? It was very it was calming, and you know, even if there was, you know, a spirit there or spirits, I didn't feel it was malevolent. You know, she just wanted to be closer to her family.
Yeah. First off, happy birthday, Jack.
Oh, I appreciate that.
And second, yeah, that story I've always said was actually a story that is of healing, where they didn't necessarily have the opportunity to say goodbye to their daughter, Mary, when she passed away. However, through the process of this Watsika wonder, they had an opportunity to spend 100 days with Lorancy Venom, kind of serving as their daughter and had an opportunity to say goodbye through her. So it is not really a malevolent story, but to me, it's more of a healing story for the family.
Yeah.
Real quick, gentlemen, because you're on the topic, Bobby Keller in the chat just chimed in and said there's a movie, a Lifetime movie from 96 called Buried Secrets about this place. Oh, have you guys ever seen it?
No, I never heard of it.
Well, thanks.
I've heard of the movie, but I've never seen it.
Well, thanks, Bobby, for chiming in on that one. I could tell you horror movies, I could tell you paranormal documentaries, but when it comes to Lifetime movies, Dangerous Child might be where I draw the line.
Only the Christmas movies, Bob.
That's, you know what? The Bob After Dark Christmas special needs to happen, but that's, you know, maybe we'll make that happen next Christmas.
All right.
Bob, you know what's my favorite Christmas movie? Pinocchio's Revenge.
Oh.
I really don't like you.
Callback.
I missed that one.
Oh, jeez. Pete, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your experiences. We need to get you back on the show soon.
Not a problem. You guys have a good night.
Absolutely. Thank
Thanks,
you, Pete.
Thanks, Pete.
All right. So, Jack, thank you so much for sharing your paranormal experiences with the house there. And, Count, do you have a panics take on the story of the table there?
It's very interesting, Jack. I would love to have Jack on the video with Pete and Bob and the rest of the folks there. Northwest Indiana Paranormal at the old studio, WJLB Studios.
Jack, you got to check that place
out. I would
out.
Like to get his insight on this place as far as
we,
what's going on.
I would
on.
Love to go.
Jack, did you get to see the video we did from when we did the investigation there?
I didn't see the video. I just, you know, heard a couple times you guys talking
about
it.
You guys see the video. It's pretty wild.
It looks like we're like, and I tell people, they're like, oh, you must have did some stuff to put that on. It was staged, right? No, that was staged. That was all happening. Pretty eerie stuff. I mean, I watch these paranormal shows, Jack. And sometimes you go to a whole show and nothing happens. Here we go in there and do a 20-minute video. All this stuff happens.
We had activity in the first 10, 15 minutes.
It was unbelievable.
And we had like weird, bizarre, you know, I couldn't even tell you how many investigations I've done. I've done a lot of investigations in my career, especially with the show. And I've never had activity just like pop off like that. Just random boom, 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 boom. So we're going to take Jack over to the old studio sometime. I think that'd be a lot of fun. All right, let's take a quick break, folks. For our podcast fans, stick around because you're going to be hearing words from a podcast you should be hearing about, sticking to it. You get the idea. And for our live audience, hang in there. We'll be right back.
Hey, true believers and new believers. This is Dr. David Hickney. I am a PhD in cryptozoology from MIT, and I'm the host of Freak of the Week. What's Freak of the Week? It's a podcast where people can call in to talk about all the crazy creatures and phenomena that are out there. Join me, my co-host, Dr. Elizabeth Marin, who may or may not be my sister. Spoiler, she is my sister, as we discuss such amazing topics like the ghost of Dave Coulier, the lost city of Miami, aliens, feline warriors, and much, much more. Freak of the Week comes out every week, hence the name, on Fridays. See you then.
And we're back.
Oh. That was a long break that time.
Yeah, what did you do, Cal? Did you do anything fun?
You know me, just walked around the place and shook some tables. Nothing really too drastic, though. Sure. How about you, Jack?
Oh, you know, I just did some paranormal investigating, and then I came back.
Fair enough.
You know, I was prepping for a 5K.
Really?
Yeah, I tied my shoes.
Oh, that's good. Good prep. You got to start somewhere.
All right. So this is the part of the episode we're going to be talking about lore of the week. But before we do lore of the week... Panic, I got a sound clip for you to play. You got that queued up, I hope.
Yes, let's see.
All right, now this sound clip is going to be the precursor of everything we're talking about tonight. I have to remember to keep my composure.
Oh, crap, did you scream?
All right. Okay. So that video, we can play it one more time if you can.
Yeah, I'll go back.
The thing is coming a little bit closer. Oh, crap, did you scream?
So what was that, Bob?
All right, so let me take you back to the year 2013-14. There was a big popularity surge of these things called creepypastas and sightings of these creepypasta figures. I would say the two most popular of these figures is one, the Slender Man, which we talked about back in Creepypasta Month. And then the other one is the Rake. Now, the video clip I just played for you is something that me and the Displains Ghostbusters and Dr. Ben Vanderson like to play for laughs because it's such a ridiculous noise. But in that time frame, we got a lot of videos of these things called a rake sighting. And, it, you know, you hear the term and you think, yeah, my dad asked me what I was talking about tonight. And he's like, oh, well, like the guarding instrument? I'm like, no, it's like a crawler. He's like, what's a crawler? I'm like, well, that's a good question, Dad, and I'm sure you're listening right now, so you're about to learn. I'm going to give you the definition of the rake according to the Creepypasta wiki. I'm going to read that word from word, and I'm going to pass it off to Jack, who is actually probably one of the foremost experts I know on the subject, and I'm going to have him plug his work. During the summer of 2003... events in the northeastern United States involving a strange human-like creature sparked brief local media interest before an apparent blackout was enacted. Little or no information was left intact, as most online and written accounts of the creature were mysteriously destroyed. Primarily focused in rural New York State and once found in Idaho, self-proclaimed witnesses told stories of their encounters with a creature of unknown origin. Emotions ranged from extremely traumatic levels of fright and discomfort to almost childlike sense of playfulness and curiosity. While their published versions are no longer on record, the memories remained powerful. Several of the involved parties began looking for answers that year. In early 2006, the collaboration have accumulated nearly two dozen accounts dating between the 12th century and present day, spanning four continents. In almost all cases, the stories were identical. I've been in contact with a member of the group and was able to get some excerpts from their upcoming book, A Note in 1964, Trigger Warning, Suicide. As I prepare to take my own life, I feel it is necessary to assuage any guilt or pain I have introduced through this act. It is not a fault of my own or anyone other than him. For once I awoke and felt his presence, and once I awoke and saw form, and once again I awoke and heard his voice, and I looked into his eyes. I cannot sleep without fear of what might awake to the next experience. I can never awake. Goodbye. Found in the same wooden box were two empty envelopes addressed to William and Rose, and one loose personal letter with no envelope. Dearest Lenny, I prayed for you. He spoke your name. Journal entry from 1890s. This is translated from Spanish. I have experienced the greatest terror. I have experienced the greatest terror. I have experienced the greatest terror. I see his eyes when I close mine. They are hollow, black. They saw me and pierced me. His wet hand. I will not sleep. His voice. And then the text becomes intelligible. A Mariner's Log from 1691. He came to me in my sleep. From the foot of the bed, I felt a sensation. He took everything. We must return to England. We shall not return here again without the request, at the request of the rake. From a witness in 2006. 3 years ago, I had just returned from a trip to Niagara Falls with my family on the 4th of July. We were all very exhausted from a long day of driving, so my husband and I put the kids to bed and called it a night. About 4 a.m., I woke up thinking my husband had gotten up to use the restroom. I used the moment to steal back a couple sheets, only to wake him in the process. I apologized and told him that I thought he got out of bed, and when he turned to face me, he gasped and pulled his feet up from the end of the bed so quickly, his knee almost knocked me out of bed. He then grabbed me and said nothing. After adjusting to the dark for a half a second, I was able to see what caused the strange reaction. At the foot of the bed, sitting and facing away from us, there was what appeared to be a naked man, or a hairless dog of some sort. In a body position was disturbing and unnatural, as if it was been hit by a car or something. For some reason, I was not instantly frightened by it, but more concerned as to its condition. At this point, I was somewhat under the assumption we were supposed to help him. My husband was peering over at his knee, tucked into the fetal position, occasionally glancing at me before returning to the creature. In a flurry of motion, the creature scrambled around the side of the bed and then quickly, in a flailing sort of motion, right along the bed until it was less than a foot away from my husband's face. The creature was silent for about 30 seconds, or probably closer to 5, it just seemed like a while, just looking at my husband. The creature placed its hand on his knee and then ran into the hallway leading into the kids' rooms. I screamed and ran for a light switch, planning to stop him before he could hurt my children. When I got to the hallway, the light from the bedroom was enough to see it crouching and hunched about 20 feet away. He turned around and looked directly at me, covered in blood. I flipped a switch on the wall and saw my daughter, Clara. The creature ran down the stairs while my husband and I rushed to help our daughter. She was very badly injured and only spoke once more in her life. She said, "He is the rake." My husband drove his car into the lake that night while rushing our daughter to the hospital. They did not survive. Being a small town, news got around pretty quickly. The police were pretty helpful at first, and the local newspaper took a lot of interest in it as well. However, the story was never published, and the local news station never picked it up either. For several months, my son Justin and I stayed in a hotel near my parents' house. After we returned home, I began looking answers for myself, and I eventually located a man in the next town over who had a similar story, and we got in contact and began talking about our experiences. He knew of two other people in New York who have seen the same creature, who are now referred to as the Rake. And that's just a couple of them. I mean, that's, you know, coming straight from the Creepypasta Wiki, but there's other ones out there. It's just like with the Slender Man phenomenon, when that was a big deal. Lots of people claim that they've seen this creature, and it's the characteristics all seem to be about the same. The reason why I reached out to Jack tonight to kind of be our guest on the topic is because Jack's been researching not only the rake, but this phenomenon known as crawlers as a whole. And he's interviewed real life people who have been, you know, kind of doing research on the same topic and have had experiences. You know, if you go online and you type in rake experiences, you can find popular YouTubers like JStation out there who, you know, oh my gosh, I found a rake. You know, there's lots of those comical ones. But I remember when Jack and I had this conversation back at Chet's when we were talking about this concept. And I remember Jack just looking at me and saying, you know, these people's experiences are real. And they're real things that need to stand out. Jack, we're going to get back to you here in just a moment. We have a few callers, I think, on the line.
We got two on the line right now.
Let's take the first one, whoever it is, just throw them right
Danielle.
Down. Danielle, you're on the line. Where are you calling from?
Hi, I'm calling from Berwyn, Illinois.
Ah, Berwyn.
Yeah.
Home of Sven Gulli.
I'm a friend of Jack's. I just wanted to say a big shout out and happy birthday.
Oh, thanks.
You're awesome,
thanks,
dude.
Danielle.
You're welcome.
Oh, well, thank you for thanks, Jack. Appreciate the Jack getting happy birthday messages from the Jackdom.
How about that?
The Jackdom. Do you like that name, Jack? What was your name again from Berwyn?
Danielle.
Do you like the term from the Jackdom? That's the fans of Jack. Do you like that term?
Sure.
I like it.
Okay, we're sticking to the Jackdom.
How about the Jackhammers?
The Jack. Yeah, we're sticking to the Jackdom.
That's a great one.
Thank you so much for calling in and wishing him a happy birthday, and we appreciate
it. No problem.
All right, who else?
You should, Danielle. Thank you.
Yes.
No problem.
How about the jackalope?
The jackalope?
The jackalope.
The jackalopes?
The jackalope?
I don't know.
I like that. The jackalope is a cryptid I talk about often.
Could relate to Jack.
All right, who else we got?
Got John on the line.
Now, John, you're calling late.
He's taking the place of Jack.
I was going to say, you're swapping the place of Jack because you're calling in about 10 o'clock when I'm falling asleep here at the desk.
How doing, Bob?
How you doing tonight, John?
Hey, happy birthday, Jack.
Hey, thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Hey, boy, it really is an honor, you know, that I am going to be hopefully. So, Bob, you're going to have to end the show after I hang up. Hopefully, I am the last caller tonight, probably the only night in the history of Bob After Dark, because Jack is on the air and he is not going to call tonight.
Can he call? He can still call up, I think.
Jack, don't call in.
His birthday. I am the last caller to call Bob After Dark. Mark this date down. It's amazing.
Well, thank you. John, you got something on your mind other than gloating that you're going to be the last caller?
That is it, my friend. And you guys, great show. And
thank you, John.
Once again, happy birthday, Jack.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
All righty, we'll see you guys.
I'm sure somebody else will call in either from the Children of the Night or the Jackdom.
Jack's going to walk out of the room and call up himself.
Do you have fans? Well, you definitely have fans.
Oh, you're talking about a name for them?
Yeah, do you have a name for your fan base? Or do we just share the Children of the Night? Like, we share that.
The Panickers?
I think we share Children of the Night. We share that. We lump them together. We're showrunners.
Too many pages.
Now, Jack.
Yes.
Let's talk about what a crawler is. What is the rake? And then you used another term for them too. I remember I saw when you shared the status initially about it. Troglodyte?
Yeah, troglodytes.
So what's the difference between the three? What would you define the three as?
Well, that's really the hard part because it gets even broader. Like you could possibly include Wendigo. You could possibly include Skinwalker. So what are all these beings? Are they different? Are they the same? There's really a debate, and I talk about this in the book that I that's coming up. But so let's kind of start back from the beginning. The stories that you shared, as great as they are, you know, we know the sources of these stories.
Yes,
they are fictional stories. I know you did an episode before on creepypastas, but just to refresh the audience on what a creepypasta is. A creepypasta is a fictional scary story generated by internet users that revolve around, you know, the paranormal or, you know, a mystery or strange encounters. You know, some of the most famous creepypastas are, you know, Slender Man, the Russian Sleep Experiment, the Back Rooms, and the Rake. So we actually know, you know, the origins of the rake. The rake is a fictional creature.
Yes.
The rake was created on a message board called 4chan, and it was created in 2005. And it wasn't just it was a gradual creation, actually. There was a thread on 4chan that where somebody said, hey, let's create a new monster. And, you know, over the course of, you know, some time, they, you know, continue to add, you know, different characteristics to this monster. And it, the final result was a being that was, you know, a tall being that was very limber, pale skinned, hairless. So that was, you know, that's what a rake is. And usually it's, you know, kind of slouched over while it's walking. So the problem that we run into is that people keep seeing, you know, a similar creature. Now, in 2005, there was a film that came out, a horror film called The Descent. The Descent, it was a UK film. Well, I should say it premiered in the UK in 2005. It didn't premiere in the United States until 2006. So what the film is about is six female friends go spelunking and they get lost in the caves. And while being lost in there, they encounter these beings that were basically, you know, they look very rake-like, and they were beings that evolved, you know, an offshoot of humanity that evolved in the caves. And that's why they're pale skinned. They use echolocation in order to travel, so they're blind. Did the rake come from these creatures in The Descent? We don't know. The creatures are never called anything in the movie. On set of the movie, they were known as crawlers. So I want to read something briefly from Roger Ebert.
I'm going to hold that thought, Jack. People are yelling at you in the chat to plug the book. The book's not out yet. Jack needs about 20 to 30 more bottles of ink and a few more quills with some lambskin pages.
So here's the thing, guys. Like the book is not out yet. I had told Bob and I have talked a lot about this. I thought the book would be out this year, but it turns out when you're writing a book and have to do a lot of research, there's a lot of research that's involved in this. Interviewing people, interviewing professors, you know, reaching out to people, coordinating. It's not easy, as it turns out. So yeah, the book is not out yet, but it should be out next year at some point. And hopefully Bob will, you know, announce that.
And I'm actually, for you guys out there just listening real quick, if you didn't know, I will be writing the foreword in the book as well. So yes. When you guys pick up a copy of Jack's book, the foreword is written by yours truly, Bob.
Think I'm writing the backward, right? I'm writing the backward, I think. Jack, we didn't talk about that, but I think I am.
You could write the summary, Panic.
All right,
summary.
I'll sum it up.
Sum it up. There's these things that crawl around, calm crawlers.
Yeah.
Hashtag, where's the Yule Cat?
Yeah. Oh, and one more before Jack continues on here. I got to say, it's a Yule Cat miracle outside. I know I sometimes do the shot of the street there, but the camera didn't pick it up. Jack and Bob and everybody listening, this is a Yule Cat miracle. They're putting up the Christmas decorations on the poles outside.
That's great.
Right?
Thank you for interrupting Jack's
quote. Christmas miracle.
You can't see him, but it's a Yule Cat miracle outside on the boulevard here. They're putting up Christmas decorations. So
Thanks, Count. We appreciate the Christmas decoration update.
Yule Cat.
Jack, let's get back to crawlers. Unless the Yule Cat starts running up and down the street by the studio.
It's a miracle.
I would be grumpy if I looked out the window and saw that.
Oh,
I'd be
no.
like, oh, great, he's here for me. Or she. Whatever.
Whatever, the old cat.
All right, move on.
That's gonna be my next book, The Yule Cat.
I can look forward to that book.
We don't need more of The Yule Cat, people. It's literally one story.
Let Jack Wano write what he wants to write.
Fine.
About.
Jack, you write in The Yule Cat story, Panic will write the foreword for
okay.
it.
Okay.
And a backward.
There we go.
All right, so back to the plot here.
So, yeah, Roger Ebert wrote a review of The Descent, and I'm going to read you a paragraph of what he wrote. He says, "The Descent works and plays not only with movie imagery, but with the stuff of myth and dreams as well. It evokes hellish visions from famous paintings, Goya's black paintings, Fuseli's The Nightmare, to Gothic gargoyles and Dore's engravings for Dante's Inferno. These almost subliminal references help drive The Descent and give it a powerful mythic energy. It grasps when and how to draw upon these images to create such the right tone of hallucinatory fear and set it reverberating in your head. I think, unintentionally, Roger Ebert got to the heart of the matter of the rake and crawlers in the film. It really begs the question, what came first, the myth or the monster?" I've interviewed, I believe, 10 people now who have said that they have seen these beings called crawlers. Now, the people that I've interviewed, most sightings are actually in the Midwest for some reason. There really are sightings all around the country, though, in rural areas, usually around caves or around cemeteries. Now, here's the thing. You could say that people have seen the film and their mind played tricks on them.
Matrixing it.
What's that?
Matrixing it.
Yeah. Thinking that they saw, the creature that they saw in the movie. But the thing is, there's a couple things to that. A lot of sightings are prior to the 2005 release of the movie. Some go back to 2001, some go back to the 90s, even further than that. Also, when you interview these people one-on-one, you get a good sense of, where they're coming from, what they saw, and it really hits you that they saw something. What they saw, I'm not sure, but they definitely saw something. Also keep in mind that most of the people I interviewed weren't even aware of the film. I think, like I said, what came first, the myth or the monster? Either one is extraordinary. The former implies that this fictional creation has sprung to life from the collective unconscious, from the countless retelling of creatures that created a thought form. The latter suggests that the creature has existed for a very long time in our world and etched its way into our minds as some necrophagic archetype. That's a little excerpt from my book, by the way, that I just read.
Ooh, we got a leak? A
teaser.
That was good stuff. Your check's in the mail, bud.
Speaking of the collective unconscious, that term was coined by psychologist Carl Jung. Carl Jung, near the end of his life, he kind of dabbled into synchronicity, into the paranormal, really with a focus on UFOs. And that term that Roger Ebert used, where he said, or that phrase, I should say, where he says that The Descent gives it a powerful mythic energy. I think that is often what happens in the paranormal. These archetypes, which is, these recurring images throughout history that are etched into our minds,
yeah.
These symbols have energy. These symbols have
yes.
life. These symbols manifest into our world. I think we see this, and as Carl Jung believed, in UFOs. Carl Jung believed that UFOs were a coalescence of our psychic energy and the external world, a combination of the internal and external manifesting in unique ways. That
probably explains why often UFO sightings come in different forms and morph. They always seem to morph. They always seem to change color, to change shape, to disappear.
You know, Jack, I wanted to ask quick, because we were talking about what came first, the monster or the myth. If the myth came first, is it possible, because I buy into the concept, the same thing, where we put the energy out there and something can manifest from it. I think that's where a lot of, like, things that attach to your fear come from, more than not. Would you consider something like the actual rake sightings that we have from people? Because you can't discredit people. Like, you can, but you shouldn't as a good investigator. Do you think what people experience is something like a tulpa or a matrixing effect when it comes to these things? Where it's like, you know, you're scared and you kind of manifest it to be.
Yeah, I think that's definitely possible. I think saying tulpa or thought form is a... is on the right track. I think I do think it is a simplification of what's actually taking place. But like Carl Jung explained about UFOs, I think we could apply that to other aspects of the paranormal as well. And I haven't come up with a conclusion about what the rakes or crawlers are. And I'm actually not, I don't intend to either. All I know is that people are having these real life experiences. I'm telling you, I really do have to stress that when I interview these witnesses, like it's so pure, it's so legitimate. You know, often in a paranormal, unfortunately, we hear things secondhand source, third hand source.
Sometimes 20 hand source.
Yeah. He said, she said kind of deals. It's really important in the paranormal to get to the source of the matter, which is why I contacted the woman who saw the kangaroo sighting. That's, you know, so I had to. You know, so this really brings me into something I'm helping to develop, the idea of paraanthropology, the coalescence of the paranormal and anthropology. Like I said earlier, I have a degree in anthropology. There is a researcher named Dr. Jack Hunter. He's out in the UK, and he didn't come up with the he didn't found paranthropology, but he certainly is going to go down in history as one of the people that developed it. He did create a journal called Paranthropology. At the heart of paranthropology is using people's experiences to try to understand what's going on. And what I mean by that is when you're taking anthropology classes, you know, there's often debates on should you look at things from a subjective view or an objective view, you know, meaning should you look at things from as an outsider looking in, or should you, you know, become part of the experience yourself. And, you know, paranthropology takes that and says that we need to hear people directly from their experiences. And in the paranormal, all you have is people's own experiences. You know, you really can't take, it's really hard to come to a conclusion by stating what you think something is, which is why I'm not trying to do that. I'm trying to gather people's experiences and just kind of, I don't want to say let it hang there, but kind of, you know, have others develop their own ideas. You know, I'm not going to be able to come up with the answers, but maybe if I collect enough data, people in the future will be able to, develop a hypothesis of what's really going on.
It makes sense, especially when you look at things like, I don't want to say cryptids, but even cryptids, ghost stories, paranormal encounters that are, I would say, like culturally infused. things like the Wendigo or the Skinwalker, it makes sense to apply something like what you're saying there to the story, because the stories of things like the Wendigo and Skinwalker are heavy culture influenced.
Right. If I could give you a short transcription of...
Oh, you could give me whatever you want, Jack. It's not... You just keep talking. The fans love you. You just keep going. Keep going.
So one of the witnesses I interviewed, his name was Joshua, and he's out in Virginia. So what Joshua experienced, he says that he was a paramedic, and he was driving the ambulance, and I'm sorry, I'm pulling up the actual transcription here. He says that...
dead air.
So this was in 2016. He was the driver of the ambulance. He says that he was usually he's usually in the passenger seat. But he was the driver this time around. This was at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. But he was fully awake, and him and his partner were talking to each other. It's a common thing to do in the ambulance. He said that he's worked with his partner for about 7 or 8 years up to that point. And this took place in Richlands, Virginia, in a rural area. He usually had worked at the time 24-hour shifts. Being up late was completely normal. He said that they were fully awake, and they started to round this curve. It was on Kent's Ridge Road in Richlands, Virginia. It's a mountain road. And he says that as you come to the top, there's this open area. There's a couple of homes on the right side, and he was traveling up the road. And as he's traveling up the road, there's a curve. On the side, there's a little wooded area. And he said that he's 6'3" tall. And so the grass on the side of the road would have been up to his knee. And as he's coming around the curve, his high beams catch this figure. Its head looked like it was kind of turned away. It was crouched down. The way he described it was like an umpire, like the being was in a catcher position. And it was just kind of frozen there. It looked emaciated, and he said that this moment would really stay with him. Despite everything that he experienced as a paramedic, and he said that he's experienced a lot, he said that this was definitely something that he felt was otherworldly. He said that its limbs were very long, and even though he was 6'3" tall, he believes that this being was about a foot taller than him, about 7 feet tall. So I asked him several questions. One of the questions I asked him was, does he feel, or was he able to see its hands? And he says, no, the hands reached all the way down to past the grass. He couldn't see the hands. He couldn't see the wrist. He could only see the upper arms. And I said, well, what was your partner's reaction? And they both looked at each other, and they both kind of said, did you see that? And a couple yards ahead, they stopped, and they had, what do you call that? The lights were...
Like the spotlight?
Spotlight, thank you. They flashed a spotlight behind them, and it was gone. But they were sure that they both saw it, because they both had, a reaction at the same time. And, I asked him, I go, well, what do you think it is that you saw? And he says, I have no idea. Like, I can't even begin to tell you. He goes, but, this was in 2016. And every so often I bring it up to my girlfriend and I ask her, what do you think I saw? And, he doesn't know. And I did ask him, has he ever seen the film The Descent? He has not seen it. He was not familiar with the Rakers. It just took some browsing online, and he came across it. Well, he was telling people the story, and somebody told him that he should look online. And that's when he found this the website Reddit, and there's subreddits where people, you know,
right,
any topic,
yeah,
you know, they could be sports, paranormal, the news, current events. And so there's a subreddit called Crawlers, and people will post their experiences on there. And so he posted his experience on there to see if anybody else had, you know, familiar with what he saw.
That's wild.
So, yeah.
Then, you know, that's somebody who wasn't aware of the story prior.
That's
and that's,
right.
You know, and those are the encounters you really have to stop and kind of look at it in the bigger picture, right? You know,
yeah.
You can argue, let's say you see this movie, right? And you go out the day after and you think you see something in the tree line that's very similar, right? And, you know, you might be able to draw to the conclusion that their mind's playing tricks on them. Same thing with, like, you know, a horror movie. You go to bed and you think you see a ghost, or you think the killer's in the house, whatever it might be, right? You could always draw conclusions like that because your mind be playing tricks on you, right? Matrixing or creating a tulpa, whatever it is that you want to call it. This guy's never seen it. This guy never knew the story. And, you know, reputable job, paramedic, it's a job. You kind of have to be on your wits about it when you're doing those kinds of things. And those encounters like that, and I know I draw back to the story a lot, but it makes sense because people in credible positions like that, like the sheriff with the Loveland Frog, the people with kind of jobs like that, you kind of have to be like, well, they have a lot riding on this by coming out and telling their story. Because if people find them wrong or weird or whatever it might be, then there's a reputation on the line for them. You know, if I come out and say, hey, I saw, you know, the Beast of Bray Road when I was driving, people are like, ah, it's just Bob. But if, you know, Sheriff Cunningham, I'm just making up a name, saw it, they're going to be like, oh, well, that's a thing. So I don't know. I those are the stories you have to really stop and be look at the bigger picture in.
But that, you know, that Sheriff Cunningham, he's always seeing weird things, you know?
But you know, this story about this guy you interviewed, those are the most interesting encounters you have to really stop and think. And it's like, this guy didn't know, and he had to track down what the story was, you know?
You know, and that's really the most interesting aspect of it. He did not know anything about Crawlers, about the creepypasta rake, about
yeah.
the film. So this really goes back to what I was talking about with the collective unconscious. You know, what if these ideas are imprinted in the world mind? You know, the collective unconscious basically is the mind of everybody of the world. You know, everything's connected.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if you think about I don't know if you guys ever heard of the Sherman resonance. It's the fact that the earth vibrates electromagnetically at 7.83 hertz. Very interestingly, our brains vibrate at the same rate, 7.83 hertz. So what if you could tune your brain to that same frequency, you could collect or catch things in the electromagnetic field meter of the world
yeah.
or the collective unconscious. What if that's how paranormal experiences occur? I've been doing I've been doing kind of behind the scenes experiments and collaborating with other researchers, and I'm not quite ready to divulge everything that we found, but I think we might have found a way to induce such experiences
drugs.
With the electromagnetic field. No, not with drugs.
That was a joke. A little paranormal.
No, scientifically.
Yeah, that's wild. Let me know. Keep me updated.
Yeah, I'll keep you guys updated with that.
Jack, I have a story to share with you. Maybe you're familiar with it. This is coming from the National Cryptid Society. They're a large organization online. You submit your weird encounters with things that go bump in the night that are physical, concrete things, you know, Mothman, etc. And this is NCS Case File 70, The Pale Crawler, Large Gray Crawling Humanoid in Effingham, Illinois. Are you familiar with the story, Jack?
Yes, sir. And I interviewed a witness.
Well, I'm going to share the story, and I want your input on it before we call it a night here. So I'm going to be reading this word from the National Cryptid Society. You guys, go check this out if you'd like. In 2010, me and two friends decided that we were going to check out some haunted stuff around the country and in Effingham, Illinois. We lived about 30 minutes away from there. And this is a typical weekend night, driving out to a cemetery to respectfully explore. Sounds like something I do. We were told that the Caspar Cemetery, deep in the woods, surrounded by caves outside of Effingham, was a really good place. The night begins, we head to Effingham and stop for sodas at a gas station and then head to the country. It's about 1 to 2 a.m., so it's dark, and I see something with yellow eyes glowing off the side of the country road, just past the ditch and the headlights. Too short to be a deer, but too big to be a possum or a raccoon. As we get closer, it gets closer, and I realize what I'm looking at is skinny, hairless, gray, human-like, but definitely not human. Crazy as hell looking thing. It was crouched down. Its arms were incredibly long and looked to be about 7 feet tall or bigger standing. I could feel myself get cold and my heart race and the hair stand up on the back of my neck. I kind of whispered to myself, "What the bleep?" And then I heard my friend Harley in the back scream out, "What the blank is that?" Complete shock and terror set in, and I can't make a sound. I'm just staring at it. By that time, we were right in front of it, passing it, and just watches us drive by. It slinks into the dark. Then we all just start screaming, literally freaking out. I was convinced it was a demon for months, but still doubted myself even seeing it, thinking my mind was playing tricks on me. We didn't make it to the Caspar that night. We went straight home, and I couldn't sleep that night. 6 months later, I'm at a different friend's house, and she gets a text from her cousin. It was the trail cam picture. I went cold again. The hair on the back of my neck stood tall again. I was seeing this thing again. I knew we weren't crazy, that there was something to this. I knew for sure that my mind wasn't playing tricks on me that night. He said he caught it on a trail camera one town over. He told us later it wasn't his camera, that he was just pranking us. But I immediately recognized it. I asked her to send me a picture of it, and I sent it to Harley. He quickly replies, "That's the thing." I found that the picture was faked, but still can't help but have my doubts. I researched the picture and demons to find out some answers and found nothing. Fast forward to October 2012, I'm on Facebook and I come across a page called Weird Effingham, Illinois. So of course I start combing through the entire page and I find reports of sightings around the cemetery of creatures with glowing eyes. Nothing as in-depth as what I saw, but still enough to tell me that we are not the only ones who have seen something like that out there. I research demons and paranormal some more. Still nothing. 2014, I'm scrolling through my Facebook news feed and trail camera picture pops up. One girl I know posted it to the wall of another girl I know, so I immediately commented my story on it. When I go up to the previous comments, I see that one of the girls were talking about seeing one. She replied to my comment and told me that she had seen it in the country in Effingham too, back in 2011. This guy we went to school with commented on the status too and said that he had a friend that was super into the occult and said and that she said that they are called ghouls. So I went right into researching ghouls, as you do. What I find blows my mind. Lore says they are cave dwellers. As I said previously, the Caspar Cemetery is surrounded by caves. They feed on the freshly dead and normally stay close to cemeteries to be close to food. They have been known to show themselves to humans when trying to get close to them to eat them in times where fresh deceased bodies are scarce. I went to images of them and could only find illustrations, but they look exactly like what I saw that night. Everything I was reading was falling perfectly into place, lined up perfectly with my experience, and I could not explain it away. The last night I came across a Reddit post with a story so similar to mine with just as much detail. This was one of the most incredible things that have ever happened to me, and I will always search for more answers. Again, this is the encounter from National Cryptid Society, case number 70, the Pale Crawler. And Jack here interviewed the witness, apparently. So this is going to be a nice little...
So...
Are you willing to share that?
Sure, yeah. The witness, you know, also said when we were talking that this location is known for a lot of different types of paranormal activity. And sure enough, upon doing research, there it really is. Actually, I know of a couple of months ago that there was a ghost investigation of Caspar Cemetery. Again, the witness was very down to earth, very, very legitimate. This one in Effingham is probably one of the more famous of the crawler sightings. So it was really great to finally get in contact with them. One of the things that we did talk about, though, is the idea of ghouls. That one is a little bit problematic because the ghouls are spoken about in the Quran, which is the Muslim holy book. And the original ghouls are not, do not have the same description as, you know, crawlers or rakes. The reason why we think they do is because there was a writer named Antoine Galland, and he did a translation, the first non-Arabic translation of 1001 Nights. You guys are familiar with that?
Oh, I'm very familiar.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so he did the translation for that. And in his translation, he changed some things, a lot of things, actually. One of the things he changed is the description of the ghouls. Ghouls come from pre-Islamic Arabia. And what they are these... First of all, they're usually all black, and then they often come in like a smoky substance. There's a couple characteristics for the original ghouls that, you know, make them not crawler-like or not rake-like. When Antoine Galland changed their appearance, he made them, you know, into these monstrous creatures that dwelled in cemeteries and sit upon corpses. That gave me an idea, though. What I do in the book is I try to find examples of crawlers in mythology. And there are actually several, very interestingly. In Japan, they're called the Jikiniki. Among the Celtic people, they're known as the Dracul. And they have very similar descriptions. They're about 6 to 7 feet tall, or, you know, or very tall. And they sometimes are seen on all fours, or they're hunched over, they're pale, and they're emaciated looking, just like my witness Josh said, that it was emaciated looking. It's that idea of, you know, art imitating reality, imitating mythology. You know, how did this writer, Antoine Galen, how did he describe these creatures that were, you know, dwelling in cemeteries and feasting upon corpses? So similar to what people are seeing today. And, you know, it's probably a safe bet that these individuals did not know Antoine Galen. And how did they also know that, you know, the Jikiniki or the Dracul were so similar to what they were seeing, you know? And that is also a common characteristic of these mythological beings, the Jikiniki and the Dracul, that they feasted upon corpses. There's this famous story in ancient Japan. A samurai was the last survivor on a battlefield. So he was going to wait until dawn for help to bury the dead. But while he was waiting, he sees this pale, emaciated creature crawling toward the battlefield. Once it drew close, it started to feast upon a corpse. So he approached the creature, he drew his sword, but he couldn't decapitate it because he froze. And in this frozen state, and it wasn't froze out of, he wasn't frozen out of fear. He literally just couldn't move. So he had to spend the rest of the night watching this creature consume all his comrades. And then it kind of crawled away, and he was able to move once again. And you see this with similar creatures in mythology.
Wow. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Do you believe that person's story from Effingham?
Yeah, definitely. You know, again, I want to stress what they saw. I don't know what they saw for sure, but she definitely saw something. I'll say that.
I need to look at a map and find where Effingham is and get a grand correlation of things, because I've read stories from Cairo, Illinois, so I'm curious if it's in the same vicinity. And if it is, I'm going to argue that there's probably a window area somewhere in that vicinity, because there's a lot of weird that goes on here.
Yeah, definitely. Southern Illinois is, you know, it's ripe for paranormal activity. I mean, you have everything from all sorts of haunted towns to a rash of UFO sightings to all manners of stuff. So.
Yeah. Now, Jack, we are running out of time as far as the talk goes.
No, we got another hour.
No, we really don't. Account Panic is falling asleep back there.
No, I'm not.
Jack, I really appreciate you coming aboard and talking a little bit about this, and we're going to give you a chance to plug all of your stuff here in just a minute, but yeah. We're going to start a brand new segment tonight. I'm glad you're here to kick this off. So this EVP clip came to us from Pete Greist with Northwest Indiana Paranormal. Pete's probably asleep, staring, you know, snoring off right now, just done. So he's probably not even listening right now. But this EVP comes to us from Pete with Northwest Indiana Paranormal, shot at the Little Red Schoolhouse in Hammond, Indiana. Count, can you play that for us? Yep. One more time. All right.
What do you make of that?
Now, I know what it's supposed to say. And we're not going to say, the three of us aren't going to say what we think it says. I'm curious to hear what you, the fans, think it is. So don't say it in the chat. Go over to the Children of the Night Facebook page. Go become a fan of it. And then post what you would like. We'll post what you think it is on there. We'll post up the video on there, and you guys can chime in below and see what you guys think.
That was clear, though.
That was clear. Now, Jack, I'll let you take over here real quick. I know there's a grading scale on EVPs. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I am. You know, EVPs are one of those things where it's so hard to decipher what it's saying. So I'm not the best person to like ask what something is saying or what it means. I really don't know, but there are definitely a lot of really good EVPs out there.
Excellent. This is one of the better ones I know of offhand that I have just at my disposal. That's like here. Throughout the weeks, folks, if you're a paranormal investigator, which I do have a lot of you guys that listen, and you have an EVP that you would like us to share, make sure you guys email that bobafterdarkshow@gmail.com, or you can slide into those DMs, facebook.com/bobafterdark, or @bobafterdark on Instagram. Jack.
Yeah, you guys could find me on
Hold on.
Oh, sorry.
Hold on. Can I thank you first?
No.
Okay, I want to thank you so much for coming on and spending your birthday evening with us. I hope you enjoyed your birthday night with us.
I don't know what better way to, you know, celebrate my birthday than to be with you guys.
Oh, man, you're going to make me tear up here.
That's nice.
Now, Jack, we don't know when the book's coming out. So next year, we're going to say next August. That gives you plenty of time. We're going to say next August, 2021. You heard it here first, folks, and Jack's kicking me virtually under the table. Why didn't you say September?
I really am.
Okay, we'll say quarter four 2021. How does that sound?
Sure.
All right, quarter four 2021, we're expecting this book to come out. In the meantime, because this isn't going to be your last appearance on Bob After Dark, we promise we're going to have you back. But in the meantime, where can people find your work? Do you have anything published now that people could read? And you're doing tours and stuff? Plug, plug, plug.
Yeah, so you could find me on Facebook, Jack Chavez. I usually update my Facebook with, you know, different events I'm doing in the paranormal. I host a lot of ghost investigations in the Chicagoland area or in the Midwest. You could also email me at Jack, J-A-C-K, Jack C, the letter C, jackc4488@yahoo.com. If you want to share a story that you have, or just say what's up. Bob said, you know, I have the book coming up. So if you want to contribute to that, that would be great. I'm also in the middle of creating a website. It's going to be called parachicago.com. And it's, you know, short for Paranormal Chicago. And I'll have my writings up there and, you know, things that I'm doing, etc.
Excellent. Thank you so much for...
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Nope. Now, Count Panic,
yes.
What do you got to say?
Well, we talk about manifestation here sometimes in the show, and of course today. I'm about to manifest some cheese curds, guys.
Oh, my God. I missed the Cheese Castle so much.
Cheese Castle is still closed?
No, I mean, we can't really go. It's about to be a shutdown. That's two states we have to get through.
Okay, Bob.
And I don't think essential... I don't think Cheese Curds make it on the essential travel.
I think if anything's essential, it's Cheese Curds. So hopefully they stay open. But
and traveling state to state for them is just necessary.
Yeah, of course. Smuggling Cheese Curds across the border.
I will say I miss our stuff up in Wisconsin so much so I can have a cold spotted cow. It's some hot cheese curds. Jack, somebody on here is, you got a mailing list. Is that the parachicago.com? You have a mailing list people could get on?
I think when you go on there, you could put in your mailing.
The link's there.
Your email?
Yeah, somebody put up a link. We'll, if you give us permission, we'll share that up on the, not only the Bob After Dark page, but at the Children of the Night, people could join your mailing list.
Excellent. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad I'm breaking that to you before you even know.
Yeah, there you go. You know, my mind is everywhere, but I wouldn't know.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, Jack. I make everybody give me some sort of proverb or a quote or something then their time with me with. So give me what you got.
The veil is at its thinnest.
You're stealing Count Panic
that's
stuff
good,
here.
Though.
No,
what?
Don't.
No,
no, no,
I think
no,
you
no,
got
no.
that from me. I think you got that from me.
You mean to tell me you ain't got nothing? Out of all these quotes, out of all the, like, this giant library that probably rivals the Beauty and the Beasts one, You mean you don't have one quote for me?
The great paranormal researcher, the father of the supernatural, Charles Fort, said, "One can measure a circle starting anywhere."
That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
And thank you, Count Panic.
Yeah.
On behalf of the entire Bob After Dark team and Jack, I just want to thank you guys for listening, watching, and enjoying this episode of Bob After Dark. If you guys are enjoyed the episode, make sure you subscribe to whatever podcast service you have and leave a review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts. 5 stars would be great. It helps me out in the long run. To my mom and dad, I just want to wish you sweet dreams. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are: not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Good night, everybody.
Memoriam Development.